Hi, this is James Hinchcliffe. You need more Front Wing.
Hello and welcome to another More Front Wing podcast. I'm Steph Walcraft, joined as always by Paul Dalby. And tonight we're pleased to be joined by several of the other IndyCar bloggers as we ask them some questions about this past weekend and about the weekend to come with the centennial running of the Indianapolis 500. But before we get to that, Paul and I just have decided to get the negative out of the way first and spend a little bit of time talking about this bumping with a check deal that's happened with Ryan Hunter-Reay and Bruno Genchera earlier this week, so that we don't have to dwell on it for too long and we can focus on the positive for the bulk of the podcast. Paul, did you want to get started on this particular rant?
Sure. And I think what you just said is a good place to start. The unfortunate thing about this check bump is that it is taking away from the excitement of this weekend. It's a distraction to the race. You know, a lot of the IndyCar fans for the last, you know, month or so, they were talking about Donald Trump. They didn't want him as part of the 500 because he had become a distraction between his wild birther ideas and his possible Republican, his run for a Republican nomination for the presidency. A lot of race fans didn't want that distraction from the event. And now here we are. We're distracting from the event. We're talking about this issue that there are so many great issues to talk about, and yet we're stuck talking about this at least for first few days. Getting into the meat of the matter, though, I think I have the same opinion of a lot of fans do, and there are a few that disagree with me, but I think the bulk of the fans are just really upset about this. No, there's nothing illegal about it. I understand that, and I think everyone understands that yes, it is the car that qualifies, and it's an archaic rule that should have been changed, you know, probably back in the mid-'80s when we started mass-producing cars, you know, when March came out, and everyone bought those, and then Lowell and Reynard and yada, yada, yada. We haven't had the true specials, if you will. I mean, it's not like the Lou Moore, the Blue Crown specials and those things where the cars are really different, and that's why you qualified the car. Now they're a Dallara. One Dallara after another Dallara after another Dallara. You're not really qualifying the car. It's the driver. So, no, Andretti didn't break any rules, per se, of the rule book. But it certainly is questionable ethical grounds, at least in the minds of fans. And I think that's where a lot of fans are really getting upset about this. Andretti has, by his move, he has given the air that his team and his driver and his sponsors are more important in this race than Bruno Junqueira and ABC Supply, which was on the 41 car this weekend. And I think that's rubbing a lot of fans the wrong way, and I completely agree with them. It's hard to see this the business standpoint of this, because I'm sure Michael Andretti has very good business reasons for doing this, but most of all, you need to appease your sponsors. The problem is that if it's that important that Michael Andretti has to buy another ride to put his sponsors on, They've approached these sponsors in the wrong way. There is an inherent risk about auto racing, and particularly in open wheel racing. It's something that open wheel fans have clung to. It's a very high value to us, but there are no provisionals. There are no locked in positions in an IndyCar event. One of the great things that IndyCar fans love is that on any given weekend, whether you're Elio Castroneves or you're Dario Franchitti or you're Alex Lloyd or you're Mike Conway or you're anybody else in the paddock, you still have to qualify for an event. And if you don't run fast enough in qualifications, you're not part of that event. And no team and no driver and no sponsor should be above those rules. And that's what we've done here. Michael has put his team and his sponsors above the integrity of the event. And because of that, there are a lot of fans that feel cheated. There are a lot of fans that were emotionally invested on Sunday afternoon. And I think we'll talk about some of these other great stories, but one of the biggest stories was that Andretti Autosport was so far behind the ball here. You look at some of those. Mike Conway never even came remotely close to qualifying. Marco and Ryan Hunter-Reay barely were fast enough, and it turned out that Ryan Hunter-Reay was not fast enough. He simply wasn't fast enough. that car, that entry should not be in the race. And he shouldn't be going and buying other cars that were fast enough so that his sponsors and his drivers can get in the race. On the flip side of that coin, people say, okay, the sponsor could walk. Okay, then what I don't get is why Michael couldn't just take the sponsorship, the DHL sponsorship, the Sundrop sponsorship, and whatever other accessory sponsorships they have. Why couldn't he farm those out to Foyt and say, here's $25,000, $50,000. Can you run my logos on there so my sponsors get exposure?
Which is the way it's been done plenty of times.
Exactly. That's exactly what is happening to Fuzzy's Vodka this year that was originally on Scott Speed's. Speed. Yes, correct. Yeah. Scott Speed's car. It's now going to the 44 Panther car of Buddy Rice. Last year, when Jay Howard didn't make the race, the Service Central sponsorship from that moved from Sarah Fisher Racing over to, of all ironies, Bruno Junqueira at Faz Race Team. There are tons and tons and tons of examples of a sponsorship moving from an unqualified car to a qualified car. If Michael had done that, nobody would have said word one. Everyone would have said, oh, well, that's nice. It's good to get their sponsors exposure. Where it crossed the line is where you bought the ride for Ryan Hunter-Reay. And I don't in any way mean to imply that Ryan Hunter-Reay is guilty in this. He's a contracted driver. He's just told to do what he's told to do. So, I don't hold him in any blame of this. I put 90% of this on Michael Andretti and 10% on AJ Foyt for accepting, not blood money, but it certainly is money that he looked over his own financial interest in this over the event as well, in my opinion. So
I completely agree with you that a great deal of the blame falls on Michael Andretti and AJ Foyt, but James Black from 16th and Georgetown made an excellent point on Twitter, I think it was earlier today, that I hadn't realized and hadn't considered. There's actually a rule in the rule book that stipulates that every driver change of this type needs to be approved by IndyCar, I did not think of that before he mentioned it, and so they are not quite as culpable, but they are culpable in this as well because they let it happen. The only other two things that I want to address are, I have rarely disagreed with Randy Bernard. I think he's an excellent leader, and I think he's been doing an excellent job, but in some of the comments that he made on Speed yesterday with, I think it was Marshall Pruitt,
right.
I was very in disagreement, heavily in disagreement, and very upset to see that he didn't seem to think that there was a single thing wrong with this. He totally was looking at it from the commercial side and saying, there are sponsors that needed to be appeased, and so there was nothing wrong with the deal. Well, here's my counter argument to that. You can please the sponsors all you want, but we've got fans that have been coming to Bump Day for decades that are saying, well, if we're going to devalue what's done on Bump Day this much, I'm not going to bother showing up anymore because there's no suspense to it. If I'm done, if I go home on Sunday night and wake up Monday morning and find that all the work that I saw done on Sunday is undone when somebody opens their checkbook, then what's the point in me going there? So the problem with allowing this sort of thing to happen is that it starts a vicious cycle of people not caring, not showing up, not spending their money, not drawing eyeballs to appease the very sponsors that we're appeasing by doing this deal in the first place. So it's completely backwards thinking, and it's very unusual that I completely disagreed with Randy Bernard, but I think he's way off base on this one, and it's very disappointing to see this be the first time that I've truly seen an instance where it's been a detriment to a decision that he came from outside auto racing, because that seems to be a big part of the problem here. I do think that it's not correct to blame Ryan Hunter-Reay at all, and people are saying they're going to boo the 41 entry on Sunday when it's introduced, and I don't think that's right. I mean, I guess what I would want to say to Ryan is don't take it personally because they're not booing you. They're booing the principle of what happened, or at least I hope that that's the case, because Ryan, if he doesn't show up and drive the car, he loses his job. And that's not fair for anybody to expect him to walk away just because he thinks this is wrong. I mean, it's easy for us to say that, right? But this is his livelihood, and this is his career. And to think about how we all talked about, Sebastian Savager walking away, which was a different situation. But a quitter is a quitter, and nobody likes to see that. And,
you know, just it would make Ryan's life a whole lot more difficult if he was seen walking away from a team for any reason. So I don't think it's right to blame him. Another thing that we're seeing happening that is just all kinds of wrong is people lashing out at the sponsors, especially through social media. This, you know, it may be that the sponsors requested this, that they didn't understand, that the teams need to do a better job of explaining to the sponsors how, in particular, Indy 500 qualifying works. But to lash out at the sponsors publicly and say, we hate you, we're not going to use your product anymore, we hope your car crashes at the beginning of the race, that is so counterproductive, because you have to think of the big picture. These are still sponsors that are supporting IndyCar as a whole. And so to go out and attack them in such a way, it's really, not only does it put a bad taste in their mouths, but if other companies are watching the way that IndyCar fans are behaving in response to this, it puts everybody in a bad light to them as well, and they may lose interest where they had originally had interest. So I think that the people that are taking that approach really need to cool their heels on that. But ultimately, I think my final point on this is, the best thing that we can do as a fan base is accept that this has happened. It sucks, but we need to try to look at it in terms of the fact that we need to do what we can to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And the way to do that is to help IndyCar understand why we think it's wrong and to convince them to change this extremely out-of-date rule, like you mentioned, that allowed this to happen in the first place.
You know, I agree with both of those issues you said, particularly the Randy Bernard. I was shocked to read what he had said to Marshall Pruitt. I, like you, was very disappointed. I don't think I've ever taken quite as much issue with Randy as I did when he made that statement. But when you speak about the sponsors and how we need to hold them, you know, not guilty of this, I see your point, but I would put an asterisk there where, if they were so dead set on having Ryan Hunter Ray in their sponsored car that they pushed Michael Andretti to do this, then I do hold them liable. If this
fine,
was
fine, but I don't think anybody ever explained to them how auto racing works in the first place, which is the point that you made in the beginning. That you know, especially when you're qualifying for the Indy 500, especially when you're qualifying for it this year. It's never a set-in-stone guarantee, and I think part of the problem is that it hasn't been that much of a problem for a long time. This is the first year in almost decades where bump day has really presented a serious issue of full-time entrants for the season not making the field. And so I'm not sure that anybody, especially at Andretti Autosport, ever actually gave some thought to putting a clause in the contract that said, you know what, we might not make the Indianapolis 500, because they probably didn't really consider that it might be a possibility.
Well, I think they had to. I mean, last year, what did we have, like 36 cars going last year, and the 7-Eleven sponsored car of Tony Kanaan almost didn't make it. I mean, they were down to... I don't remember.
It almost didn't make it, but it did make it.
Right,
and
but because of that, they had to know that there's a chance that they didn't make it. I mean,
yeah, but it was such an outside chance based on their experiences for the last 15 or so years. It was such an outside chance that I can see why they didn't really consider it as a possibility.
Well, then, if that was the case, then that again goes back onto Andretti Autosport that, you know, with 40 cars going for 33 positions, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out somebody's going home. And when those outsiders are, you know, Thomas Schechter and Townsend Bell and, I mean, Buddy Rice, I mean, these guys know how to wheel a car. It's been 20 years probably since it was this difficult to get into the 500. You have to go into it thinking that there is a chance you're not going to make it.
Right, but if you're arrogant enough to go and buy a seat for your driver and your sponsors after the fact, then you're arrogant enough to believe that your cars will all make the race and that it's not going to be an issue.
I will grant you that. I think we could find that common ground there. And the other sad thing out of this, and I guess it's sad for the time, but he's going to land on his feet, is that Tom Anderson has become the scapegoat at Andretti Autosport for this.
Extremely sad. I was shocked to see that.
You know, I understand that in these situations that people are not happy and that, you know, maybe it's a knee-jerk reaction, the heads are going to roll. But Tom Anderson, he's just too good to let go over this. You look at the programs he's run. He's run Target Chip Ganassi. He's run Fernandez Racing, in a couple different series. This guy knows how to make teams win. And yeah, they're down right now. But, I mean, to get rid of somebody, the talent of Tom Anderson, particularly after you've already lost a lot of talent. I mean, they've lost Eric Cowden. They've lost, so many other good engineers and mechanics on that team. And I think we're already seeing that's a huge part that shouldn't be overlooked of why Andretti Autosport is down right now. They have lost a lot of talent, wrenches and engineering talent over the last, call it 3, 4, 5 years. And to part ways with someone on your terms that you get rid of the likes of a Tom Anderson, I mean, that if Michael thinks that getting rid of Tom Anderson is going to improve his team, I don't buy it. I don't buy it for a minute. And I wouldn't be surprised at all to see someone of the likes of Sam Schmidt, jump at getting someone like Tom Anderson.
Oh, he won't be out of work for long.
No, I'd be surprised if he's not wearing a logoed shirt this weekend.
The quip that I keep hearing about Tom Anderson is that Michael Andretti fired him because he can't fire himself.
Exactly. He already fired Green.
Exactly. If everybody else around you is the problem,
yeah,
maybe everybody else isn't the problem. But that's Michael Andretti is an awfully legendary name for us to be saying such things about, and we don't really know the inner workings of what's going on over there right now. So all we can do is speculate. But it is an extremely sad situation for sure. But to summarize, change the rule. It's really what it comes down to.
I don't think there's anybody who would disagree with that. Hopefully by the time we reconvene next May, that rule will be different.
Absolutely. And with that, let's leave the negative behind and turn our eyes to the positive and speak to some of our fellow bloggers. We've been spending the last day or so speaking to them about some of the events that have transpired over the last weekend and what we expect to see going forward. We just put together a quick little list of questions to ask each of them to get their thoughts on the Indianapolis 500. It's more Front Wing's version of Blogger Night. The first of the IndyCar bloggers to join us this evening is Tony Johns from PopOffValve.com. Tony, thanks so much for speaking with us tonight.
Glad to be here.
So we've got three questions that we're going to ask each blogger that we're speaking to this evening. The first is, what did you feel that the big story was out of this past weekend?
Oh, that's a good question. There's so many good stories. Personally, I would have to say that the best stories came on bump day, and they're good stories on pole day, obviously, especially Simona De Silvestro coming back from being fried again for the second year in a row, qualifying strongly in the field with Mickey Mouse gloves on her hands, Pippa Mann making it into the show in a conquest car that's probably a little slower than really ought to be. And, of course, Alex Tagliani winning the pole. That's a huge story. But for me, the drama has always been more pronounced on bump day. And that's when you get the people who invest so much effort and determination into their qualifying attempts, and sometimes these last gasp stories are the ones that bring the most drama and the most entertainment. So I would say it would be a toss up between Paul Tracy dirt tracking it in the rain and Alex Lloyd basically taking a car that is more sled than speed machine and placing it into the field on the third and final attempt of his qualifying session, and I would probably have to give the edge to Alex Lloyd there. That was my favorite story.
Well, looking forward to this coming weekend, then, what do you think we're going to be talking about following the race this weekend?
I think the main thing we're going to be talking about is how amazingly talented and skilled the entire field is, top to bottom. I mean, we've already been talking about it ad nauseum through the whole season. It's a function of so many good drivers being paired up with good teams, and some of the smaller teams really coming into their own. I mean, we're still seeing Ganassi and Penske dominating the way that they do, but the gaps are so much smaller now. And I think here at Indianapolis is the best example of that. And Alex Tagliani and on the pole with Sam Schmidt. Sam Schmidt's team is going to be a huge story in this race, regardless of whether or not he wins it. Schmidt's team has three cars in the top six of qualifying, if you count Dan Weldon with Brian Herta Autosport. The equipment and the technical assistance that they're getting from Sam Schmidt's team is largely responsible for where they are. And I think that they can make a big splash in the race. You also have to keep an eye on Penske Racing. They had a poor qualifying performance during pole and bump day, but don't expect them to stay towards the back of the pack, especially Helio Castroneves with Tim Cindric calling the shots. I can't imagine them not getting towards the front and getting towards the front quickly. There's also Tony Kanaan back there, and you know there's an annual bet to see how many people he's going to pass on the first lap. I think the biggest story is that there are really no clear favorites. We all know that Indianapolis is a track where skill and preparation can be overruled by luck of the draw, by a gust of wind, by a drop of rain. I think the one thing we can predict is that it's going to be unpredictable.
Okay, so last one for you. Who wins it this weekend?
Easy one for you.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Ed Carpenter. Ed Carpenter is one of those guys who remains underrated. Even though he's a fan favorite and he made a lot of progress, he's had a couple of finishes that are just on the cusp of being close to a win. But I think the reason why I'm going to pick him, besides the fact that it will make me incredibly popular with Prestog, who would probably explode into a million pieces if he won. Apart from that, I don't think anybody expected Sarah Fisher Racing to be in the third row of the Indianapolis 500 after qualifying. That is such a huge leap for that team. I mean, even with Graham Rahal behind the wheel last year, you didn't see that kind of significant jump. And I think that the combination of Sarah Fisher Racing and Ed Carpenter are going to be a lot stronger than a lot of people will expect. And I think that if a couple of lucky chances come their way, they could be in contention to win it all this year.
Okay, that's great. Thanks so much for your insight. It's greatly appreciated, and we'll catch up with you this weekend.
Terrific. I'm glad I could just keep it under 10 minutes for you. Look forward to my next 3,000-word article at popoffvalve.com.
Okay,
before we let Tony go, it's probably a good time to also remind folks about the More Pop-Off Valve?
No, you're not up to speed, Paul. We had to make a name change. I was just about to say the same thing. It's now the...
Wait. No, the order has been set. We are not changing things now.
No. It was formerly the Donut Stravaganza, but now it's
Mugseum and Bunapalooza.
What?
That's correct.
Yes, the Mugseum and Bunapalooza.
That's correct. We are going to be meeting at, if the weather holds out, knock on wood, and we get the race in on Sunday, we will be meeting at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum at, what did we say? It would be 9 o'clock?
9 o'clock, because that's when the museum opens. We were formerly going to be meeting at Long's Donuts before that for breakfast, but sadly Long's is not open on Memorial Day.
What? Yeah, insert a picture of me doing the Khan scream from Star Trek II. I was very disappointed in that. But we will be meeting at the IMS Museum at 9 and then adjourning to the famed Robin Miller Hangout Mug and Bun restaurant at 10:30 for some hobnobbing and tweet-up fun and a little bit of gastrointestinal distress. I mean, what more could that for from a Memorial Day Monday?
Speaking of gastrointestinal distress. We should let Robin know that we're doing that and see if he shows up. You might.
I was wondering where you were going with that stuff.
We'd have to provide some incentives. So maybe if we say that we're going to dirt track our way there, he might show.
Well, we'll have to see if we can convince him.
Better you than me. I don't know if he would listen to me.
Well, we'll give it a shot. Okay, Tony. So we'll see you this weekend.
Terrific. Thanks.
Thanks.
Glad
you.
To be here.
Thanks
a lot, Tony.
Bye.
And next up, we have George Phillips from oilpressure.com. George, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure to speak with you, and your in-depth Indy 500 knowledge will come into good use here, no doubt. So let's start you with this first one, wondering what you felt that the big story was from this past weekend.
Well, obviously, the big story, well, it turned out to not be a story, but, of course, it was Danica potentially not making the race, but she did, obviously. And then, of course, the follow-up was actually on Monday with the switch with Bruno. And so, obviously, those are the two big stories, and I guess that's probably, if you're going to ask 10 people, they'll probably say the same 10 things.
Fair enough. Paul?
All right, George, going into this weekend, what stories are you watching? What do you think we'll be talking about after the race this weekend?
I'm really following two people, and they both happen to be females, but they're not. That's not why I'm following them, but I think they're two of the most intriguing stories. One is Simona and her struggles, and I was already a fan of hers, but the way, I mean, that is a driver with guts. The way she just sucked it up and put that car in the field, because that car is a sled. We all know that. That car is old, it's heavy, and I think most people did not really give her much of a chance of being able to do that. But to do that, plus having her hand so badly burned, so you had her in some deep physical pain, plus it had to shake her up to take that ride that she did. To be upside down in a car like that is on fire, you have burning fuel down there, she's trapped, and oh, by the way, you just went tumbling through the air at 220 miles an hour. So to get back in that car 2 days later and do what she did is just, I think, a phenomenal achievement, and I think a lot of people aren't really giving it that much attention. So that's one of my two stories, and the other unsung hero, I think, is Pippa Mann, because Pippa got in, this is her very first time, she did test, I think at Texas, she tested back in March, I guess, but she, this is going to be her very first IndyCar race, and just happens to be the Indianapolis 500. She's with a very underfunded team, and really probably the most underfunded team, full-time team on the grid, and her teammate didn't make it. He's full-time. He's already qualified for an Indy 500, but she stuck that thing in the show, and I don't think many people gave her much of a chance. Nothing against her and her ability, but just the fact a one-off with a very small underfunded team. So I think she's done a great job just to get in, and I was scared to death that we might be looking at a second switch because, you know, Eric Bachelor did that 2 years ago when he pulled, once again to Bruno, but he pulled Bruno out of the car for Tagliani. And I was afraid he was going to pull Pippa out of the car for Saavedra, but to his credit, he didn't.
That's correct. Okay, last one for you. Who do you think is going to win it on Sunday?
I don't know. And I've given it thought, and I still don't know. My gut says Serbia.
That's one we haven't heard yet.
Once again, he, and like you just said, you haven't heard that one yet because he's not getting a lot of play. My head says it'll be Dixon. But Serbia, I think he's going to be overlooked, and don't count him out. I mean, he's having a great season, third in points. He's with a good team. He's under the radar. In that third starting spot, there have been a lot of victories come from that spot.
Okay. That's great. Thanks so much, George. Appreciate your insight, and it's always great to hear from you.
Well, good to talk to y'all.
We look forward to seeing you this weekend, George.
Yeah, same here.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Thanks. All right.
And up next in the list of bloggers that we're speaking to tonight is Zachary Houghton from IndyCar Advocate, and also he's a contributor to IndyCar Nation. Zach, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
So we're asking everybody three questions tonight, and the first one is, what did you feel that the big story was out of this past weekend?
Oh, wow. Well, there were certainly plenty to pick from. You know, I was out of the track both for pole day and bump day, and to me, I really think it was just the purely gritty, gutsy sort of qualification attempts we saw from some of the people in this field. You know, there's normally qualifications in recent years. You might have one guy trying to Buddy Lazier it out there at the last minute, more often than not actually being Buddy Lazier. But, you know, there was that, I don't know, this year it just seemed like there was a little bit more. You had on pole day, you had Simona De Silvestro with those second-degree burns on her hands, and she went out there in this ancient tub that was her backup after they wrecked the primary. And you just didn't see how she was going to make the field. And she pulls off this 224 number, and, you know, she gets bumped, and she goes back out there, and you just look at her hands, and you look at her on the Jumbotron and saw how much pain she had to be in putting those gloves off and on as she's going back out there. And it was just gutsy, you know. If I burn myself on the stove or something, my wife hears about it for a week. So it really does seem like she's probably just about the toughest person out there. And I think she left pole day I don't see how you could leave pole day without being a fan of Simona's. It was just such a gutsy performance, really. The pain she had to be in to do that, to put that together with the car she put it in, we saw sort of an indie legend in the making, I think. On bump day, we saw all sorts of things, but I really didn't think Alex Lloyd was going to put it in the field. I didn't think we were going to have a coin car in the field. They didn't look up to snuff. And I don't think I was alone on that. But Alex Lloyd, really, it seemed like an old school attempt, if that makes sense, because he takes this car, which is just, it's a substandard car from the weekend that we see, and he puts together this four lap run. The car's vibrating so badly he can't even see on the last lap. The oil pressure's going up. He thinks the engine's going to blow. I mean, this is not some safe little Dallara he's taking around the track for a joyride. I mean, this was an on the edge of your seat ride that, really, just we talk about on that ragged edge or on the ragged edge all the time, and I think that loses a little bit of meaning because we overuse it so much. But Alex Lloyd's run, just really, I'm still not sure how he did it. I think we probably have some theoretical physicists somewhere trying to figure out exactly where he found the speed in that car, because I don't know. We didn't see that all week. The only thing that changed was the tire pressure. So unless he's running some nitro back there or something, I'm not sure what happened. But, wow, I mean, just the more you think about the circumstances of that car, the more respect you have to have for Alex Lloyd on that run. And I really think those two are indicative of the sort of just pure gutsiness we saw on a field that was very close together.
Absolutely. Totally agree, Zachary. Now, looking forward to this weekend, what storylines do you think we'll be talking about coming out of the race?
Well, sure. This year, it seems like we have a lot of parity. I think that's the big word. And this is the first year for a couple of years that we could honestly point to someone as a contender that's not a Ganassi or a Penske and say, yeah, you know, I feel pretty good about that. I think they've got a shot. Now, you know, that's not to say that the Penskes and Ganassis aren't going to come to play, but we're going to have to watch how some of these smaller teams handle themselves. We're talking about Alex Taglioni, Ed Carpenter, Townsend Bell, Dan Lovin with Brian Herta. These little teams will have the speed to contend, it looks like. You know, on paper, it sure looks that way. We're going to have to see how they handle themselves over the longer runs that the bigger teams seem to excel at. And, of course, we always talk about races being won or lost in the pits, and just because we always say it doesn't mean it's not true. You know, teams are going to have to step up their game, but, I mean, gosh, look how close this field is. That's exciting. It's amazing how close these cars are. I can throw out a name like that, and you guys aren't like, well, yeah, he'll finish fifth or sixth behind all the red cars. I mean, that's not the feeling I'm getting this year. We're all kind of, well, you know, someone, pardon the language, is going to pee right into Chip Ganassi's Cheerios, and we're just not sure who. So it's going to happen. In fact, it already happened, and his name's Alex Cagliani, but it could happen again on race day, and that's awesome.
It is, definitely. Okay, one more for you. Who do you think is going to win it?
Oh, boy. You know, my head says Scott Dixon because he really has seemed to have that little bit of extra oomph or whatever you want to call it all month, and it seems to kind of be a light consensus, I suppose, in the garages that he seemed pretty good this month. But, you know, he didn't get the pole. He came darn close, but I think he's going to be in good shape for the race. I wouldn't count out Dario either. I think after the Ganassi's almost unheard of running out of gas on their qualification laps, they're going to be loaded for bear, angry, and vengeful. So we've got that. But my heart, being a native Hoosier, this being centennial, and thinking, boy, anything could happen this year, I really, really would like to see Ed Carpenter and Sarah Fisher Racing bring it home. So there's plenty of guys to cheer for through this field. I mean, I wouldn't count out any number of guys in this field, from Tony Kanaan to Thomas Schechter to Townsend Bell to Tagliani. But, you know, if I really hope it's a new winner. I'll put it that way.
I think a lot of others share that sentiment. Thanks so much for joining us, Zach. Your insight and your thoughts are greatly appreciated.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks
a lot, Zach.
Take care.
And the next blogger that we're speaking to is Chris Estrada from IndyRacingRevolution.com and also another contributor to IndyCar Nation. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Glad to be here.
So we've just got three questions for everyone today. The first is, what did you think that the biggest story was out of last weekend?
I think it definitely had to be the fact that just pole day was just so topsy-turvy. You don't normally see something like that. Just Sam Schmidt Motorsports, their effort was fantastic. Anytime you get, I believe there were three cars in the top nine, Tagliani at the top, Bell fourth, and Weldon in sixth. That was just a fantastic effort for them, and a really well-deserved one, too. Then, obviously, you have the troubles that Team Penske had. I don't know how long it's been since they've been shut out of the front row. I want to say at least 5 years, something somewhere along those lines. And then just what happened with Ganassi, just their fuel problems during the Fast 9 run. So it was just a very memorable pole day, lots of one-offs giving the regulars grief. I think it really gave people that kind of root for the underdogs, I think it really gave them hope for this Sunday and that this isn't going to be another Penske versus Ganassi Clash of the Titans type thing.
Well, speaking of Sunday, that's our next question. What do you think the biggest issue, the biggest story will be that we see in the race this weekend?
I think you just kind of have to look at, again, just the people that are outside the favorites. Obviously, the Team Penske and Team Ganassi drivers are going to be the favorites. Obviously, they've won 7 of the last 10 Indy 500s. But there are a lot of people here that have the ability to surprise. Obviously, the Sam Schmidt guys, like I just mentioned. But also, you've got Oriel Servia starting right there in the front row. He's been doing a fantastic job for Newman Haas this season, I think. You've got Ed Carpenter and Buddy Rice down there in row three. They have a lot of experience here at Indianapolis, and they can definitely get the job done. Going back further, you got the KB Racing guys. I think they could definitely get a good race setup going. They can definitely move up the field here. And also other people, too. Obviously, just like James Hinchcliffe or a J.R. Hildebrand, those two rookies have been doing very well. I've been very impressed with how they've done with this. I wasn't quite sure how they were going to handle the whole month of May and just the pressures that go along with it, but they've done a good job too. So, again, obviously the Penske Ganassi drivers are going to be the favorites, but there's certainly a lot of stories, a lot of drivers to keep an eye on outside those guys as well, and I think more than a few could come up here, surprise, and steal a win.
Okay, last question for you, Chris. Who do you think is going to win it?
Well, as much as I just said that these people can definitely surprise and steal a win, I still think that a Penske or a Ganassi driver to win this, and I've got my money right now on Dario Franchitti. I know I'm not real keen on just choosing a back-to-back champion, but I just think after what happened on pole day, just I think it's really going to make him hyper-focused. You don't normally see mistakes like that from Team Ganassi, especially at Indianapolis, but I just think that whole team's going to be locked down tight. I think Franchitti's going to be ready to go, and obviously, I think the one thing that could stop him is obviously just the inevitable crashes that happened in Indianapolis, especially with this double file restart rule. The key, pretty much, the big key, pretty much everybody's just going to be stay clean for the next 20 to 30 laps. But for some, and that's always the case. But just because of this restart rule, I think that's going to be heightened even further. So that's going to be the main key for Franchitti, I think. But other than that, I think he's got a great team, obviously, and he's one of the best. There's been at least two decades, so I feel pretty confident with his chances going in.
Well, that's great. Thank you, Chris, and thanks for your insight. Appreciate it, and hope to run into you this weekend.
We will. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys. This is going to be a big race. This is the one that we can't miss, so looking forward to being out there.
That sounds great. Okay, take care, Chris.
All right, take care.
And the final blogger that we're speaking to today is Dale Nixon, also from popoffvalve.com, formerly of My Name is Earl, and always great to hear from Dale. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks to you guys, too.
So we just got three questions for you. The first one is, what did you think that the big story was coming out of last weekend?
I think the big story was the complete El Fuldo of Andretti Green Racing. The former Andretti Green Racing, which no longer has the green to blame, and now just has an Andretti, but he managed to make Tom Anderson the scapegoat, I guess, since Michael can't fire himself.
The story that you think we'll be talking about after the race this weekend, what do you think that's going to be?
Well, the race always writes its own story. I think that what we're going to have to watch for is to see if any of these smaller teams or rather maybe not smaller, but up and coming teams, because Sam Schmidt has like 19 bazillion cars in the race and apparently has bought every used chassis on the market, to see how they make it over the 500 miles. That's where deficiencies in engineering and maybe temporary crew and mistakes of that nature can come out. So that's what I'm really going to be watching for, is if some of these smaller teams who have shown so well over during qualifying, if they could put the full 500 miles in.
Okay. Last one. Who do you think is going to win it?
Oh, God. I knew this was coming, and I still haven't made my decision. I mean, it's really hard to bet against Dario. It's really hard. He just has that calm demeanor, and he's on a roll, and they know how to set up the car for the race. You saw what happened last year with Tagliani, where they trimmed the car up too much, and he just couldn't do anything. He just went backwards during the race. So we'll have to see. I really have a lot of confidence in Dario and his crew going the full 500 miles and winning it again. It's been a while since someone won one back-to-back, but I think that there's a good chance it could happen. Of course, we could have a two-wide restart and have him get taken out by, someone in the back of the field and, render it all moot, but that's the fun of the race.
That'll be another interesting story that we'll be watching, no doubt. So, well, Dale, thanks again for joining us this week. We appreciate your insights. It's always good to sit down and chat with you for a little bit, and we're looking forward to seeing you and catching up with you this weekend as well.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks, and it'll be great to see you guys again and everyone out there. I think, just judging by the hotel reservations and the rental car prices, we're going to have a huge crowd. I couldn't even get my usual hotel downtown this year. So,
well, let's hope that holds true. So we wish you safe travels, and we'll see you here in a couple days.
See you, Dan.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, take care.
Bye bye. Well, Paul, we've asked everybody else what their opinions are. I suppose we should offer our own, huh?
I suppose. But we need to offer a lot more opinions because, well, it's our show.
It's our show. Do you want to go first?
Sure.
All right. So what did you think the big story was from last weekend?
The big story. Well, I'll tell you what my favorite story was. I don't know if it's the biggest or not, but my favorite story of the weekend was the run of Alex Lloyd in the very waning moments. That was an old school type run of, you know, I don't know what I have, but I'm going into floor it going into turn one. I'm either going to be in the show or in the wall. Where he found that speed, I have no idea, because his first two runs weren't even close. I mean, I think his second run was somewhere low 22s, I think, maybe even in 21s, and suddenly he comes out with 10 minutes to go, and he puts a run down that I think his last lap was over 224. It was just an incredible run under a lot of pressure. Final attempt of the day to bump out, I guess he bumped out Marco with that run.
Yeah.
And, you know, it reminded me so much, and I had said this on Twitter at the time, it reminded me so much of John Andretti's run from 2 years ago with Ryan Reinbold, where John had crashed earlier in the day, you know, in practice on Sunday morning. And it came down to his final attempt at the very end, and he suddenly gained something like 3 miles an hour at the very end to put his car in the show. And it was that just – That gut-wrenching drama when you accomplish something like that, and it's so emotional, and that's the stuff that people love about Bump Day, and that was, I think that was my favorite part of Bump Day, was that run of Alex Lloyd and the joy that you could see on all the Dale Coyne people.
And I suppose that we should express here the joy at not seeing James Jakes taking over that seat.
Yes.
Being the full-time entry for the season. That's Dale doing it right, I suppose we can say, after what we've seen for the last few days.
Well, yeah, and to put Jakes in that car would just be, you know, race suicide. He has no experience on ovals. He hardly has any experience in Indy cars, too. You know, he was never in any way, shape, or form going to qualify for that race.
Do you have an ice cube in your
yes,
mouth?
Yes, I do.
I can hear it.
I didn't know you were going to talk to me again.
Real professional, Paul.
Yeah, well, it's what you paid for.
All right.
Anyway, yes.
Follow your ice and let's move on.
Yeah, all right.
What's going to be the big story from the race?
The big story, I think the big story is, not so much can the little guys keep up, because when push comes to shove, I really don't think that they can, to be honest. And I hate saying that, but I think the Penske's and Ganassi's are just too good to get beaten over 500 miles. The thing I'm going to be watching, though, is can the Penske's and Ganassi's have clean races? The last 2 or 3 years, we have seen the Penske's. Basically, the winner has been which one of those 4 or 5 guys has not made the mistake. Last year, you know, Dixon's team doesn't attach his wheel on a pit stop, and he loses distance there. Will Power left with his fuel hose in. Ryan Briscoe puts it in the wall. Elio. Well, I'm forgetting what happened to Elio, but the only person that ran a clean race last year was Dario out of those 5, and we saw he just dominated the race. You know, and the year before that, there all 4 or 5 of them had made a mistake. The Ganassi guys both had pit mistakes, and I think Briscoe had either a bad pit stop or a bad tire or something along those lines, and Elio, that ran the clean race, actually drove away and won the race fairly easily. So it's going to be a question, I think, of which of the big 5 comes down to not making a mistake.
Well, and you mentioned running a clean race, something that's definitely going to factor into how difficult that will be this year is the fact that the series is really being insistent on the double file restarts.
Yes.
And the drivers are really being insistent that it's not a good idea. So I'm curious to see how that aspect of it plays out, because I could very well imagine the drivers just saying, you know what, we know you're not going to throw these restarts. We know you're not going to wave them off. So we're just going to, you know, do what we want to do and make sure everybody gets a clean line through the corners, especially if they're not bringing the sweepers out to make sure the track is clean, because that's the real concern, is that it's a really narrow groove on that racetrack, and people are especially concerned about dirtying up the tires. So,
well, and what the other side of that is, not only are they concerned about that issue of the, you know, the dirty line on the outside, what if we come down to a restart with 10 laps to go and you're in the lead and either, let's say, in third or even fifth position, you know, the next one or two cars behind you, what if you have someone back there like a Thomas Schechter or somebody who, an extremely aggressive guy who has absolutely nothing to lose by going for it, and he forces an issue. Now, let's say Thomas is running third and Dario's leading. You know Thomas is going to make a dive for the lead on that first corner. What do you do if you're Dario? Can you afford to try to hold him off in that first turn? I mean, you've got to – ultimately, nobody wants to say it, but you do still have a season to think about. You've got a pretty commanding lead. Do you force an issue and force him back in that first turn?
Sounds like racing to me.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't have an enormous problem with that. I see why the drivers do, but I don't. Get out there and race.
Yeah.
I think the issue with the dirty tires and people making mistakes because of that is a bigger problem than forcing drivers to race. Sorry that the Indy 500 is not a little bit more secure of a win for you. No, I don't buy that.
No, and I guess I don't mean it that way either. But if you're going, you know, if you have Dario in the lead and let's just hypothetically say Will Power on the outside, neither of those two are necessarily going to give in either. I could see those two going two by two into the first turn, through the first turn, and then having someone behind still try to force the issue. And that's where I could see them getting upset.
I still don't see the problem.
No. We'll see.
Now, get out there and race. Talk to us afterwards, see what happens. That's as far as I can see it. Okay, who's going to win?
After all that?
Yeah.
I can't get past this nagging feeling that Oriel Servia has got something
to
show.
I hope you're right. That would be really cool.
I after all these years, they've been coming to Indy since 1983, and Newman Haas has, you know, they've suffered two of the greatest heartbreaks in the last 50 years. Between 87 with Mario and 92 with Michael.
Yeah.
They've had good runs, obviously, those two. Michael's run in 92, Mansell's run in 91, Mansell's run in 93. You know, you can name a bunch of times when they could have, should have won, and they haven't been able to get there yet. And they've obviously been down, you know, the last couple of years since they came to the Unified IndyCar Series, but you know, this year they're strong, and Oriel, maybe if he wins the 500, finally he can start to get a little bit of respect that he just, at least not outside of racing circles, he doesn't get. When I spoke with some of the people on the team, I mean, they were just absolutely over the moon after the qualifying run, because they said they'd spent about a half an hour during the week doing qualifying runs. They never expected to be in the front row because they've been concentrating so much on their race setup. So I think they're really going to be strong. I think Oriel is extremely underrated. He's versatile. He's talented. He's fast. And I think he's going to give them all a run for their money this weekend.
Cool. Okay, your turn.
All right, Steph. What's your big event out of the weekend? Didn't see that question coming, did you?
I'm stuck between two. So I think I'm leaning slightly toward one. So I'll give you the one that I'm stuck on that's going to be my honorable mention, which is Simona. That's just an unbelievable story with her and her – we all know it, the enormous wreck, the burned hands, the tough as nails getting out there and actually doing her runs. I heard a story about her actually on Monday when I was at the media availability for the three Canadian guys. Somebody told me that Simona was told, if you keep the Mickey Mouse gloves on and don't get in the car, then your hands will probably heal up more or less okay, and there won't be any damage. But if you put on the bandages that you need to use to be able to drive, there's probably going to be some permanent scarring on the back of your hands. And she said, no, I want to drive. I'm like, does it get any tougher than that?
Yeah.
She got she gained a lot of fans. She really proved that she's the real deal. She's not out there just to tool around and be a girl in a race car. She is a racer. And you know what? I'm going to be honest with you. Some Danica fans unfollowed me this week because I said that Simona is the future of IndyCar, but I'll stand by it. I think that Danica's on her way out and Simona is on her way in, and it's fantastic, the timing, and that people are really embracing her, as they rightly should. She's got a lot to prove, and she's got a lot more to show, and I think that she's got a bright future ahead of her.
I just can't imagine how much pain she must have been in. I mean, to grip the steering wheel that hard to make this car turn, no power steering, a lot of not much downforce, but, you know, you can't let off that wheel. If your hand hurts, you suck it up and you go, or you crash.
Mm-hmm.
And she did it, what, three times, I think? Didn't she? I think she used all three attempts on Saturday.
I think so, yeah.
I mean, that's just unbelievable courage and strength to do that. And absolutely kudos to her.
Yeah, and then at the end of the day, people were watching because she was on the bubble seemed like forever. I don't know how long it actually was, just to see that she wasn't going to get bumped out. And it was just, it really added a lot of drama and suspense and interest to the day, so. That was my number two. But my number one, I think, is Ganassi running out of fuel. Both cars.
Mm.
That just doesn't happen. That was the one moment all weekend where my jaw literally dropped from my face and almost hit the floor. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. There's got to be somebody who lost his job over that. That just doesn't happen. Like, how far must they have miscalculated?
Yeah, Dario wasn't, like, a little bit off either. Not like Dixon, okay, you run out of fuel coming out of turn four. I mean, he's 25% off. He's a full lap short.
Now, the only thing that I could come up with is the fact that they were running so much faster in the afternoon than they were in the morning. Because their morning runs were in, like, the high 225s, weren't they? And the afternoon runs were more like in the low 227s. So maybe somebody failed to calculate for the fact that they were going to be running in the different conditions in the afternoon.
I just don't see that, I mean.
But that, again, it's still, that shouldn't be a mistake that somebody who works for Chip Ganassi is making.
No. And you, in that situation, you have a factor of safety. You cannot afford to run out of fuel. You can afford an extra 7 pounds and put an extra gallon of fuel in there. You can't afford to shave 7 pounds and be a gallon short. There's, how that happened, I do not know. And how it happens twice is inexplicable.
Yeah, and Dixon, he was on target to be better than Tag's time.
Mm-hmm.
If he hadn't lost the engine coming out of four, he was going to have the pole.
I think, what did he lose by? He only lost by a tenth or two, didn't he?
It wasn't much.
Ugh, yeah, heads probably rolled. All right, so then what are you looking at this weekend?
Well, my big story that we're going to be watching on Sunday is very similar to yours. I think that Penske in particular, and to a degree Ganassi as well, although they're not coming from quite as far back in the field, so I'm thinking a little more Penske on this one. They're just going to be out to prove themselves, and they're going to be angry. And Penske and Ganassi angry is never a good situation. So I think that we're going to be watching all of those guys making a charge toward the front and showing their usual dominance. And that leads into who I think is going to win the race, actually, directly. Although, that even saying that, I need to qualify the fact that once I make a pick for something, it doesn't matter what happens. I can't change it. I just can't, because if I do, without fail, the one that I was going to pick is the one that wins. So I'm going to stick with my original pick way back from before the season started, and I'm going to say Elio's going to get his fourth. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's too poetic. It's so poetic that it could even possibly be labeled as a conspiracy theory if it actually happens. So that's where my money would be if I were a betting type.
All right. Well, why don't we cover some of the other stories then, and from the weekend? And I think picking up right where you just left off with LDO, a lot of people have made an issue about how much the Penske team struggled this weekend. And I personally think maybe I might be agreeing with you here. I think that's been completely blown out of proportion. I think before Briscoe's accident Saturday morning, he was very fast. LDO was the fastest car all week. They accepted his first time just to get a time in the event. I talked to Tim Cindric on Sunday about it. They fully expected to go out and run again, and they knew they had more speed in the car. They went out early. The air was still fairly heavy. The wind was pretty stiff. They knew they had more speed in the car, and they got caught out by the rain. So that car wasn't as bad as people are making it out to have been on Saturday. So I think the Penske cars are a lot stronger than the 5th, the 16th, and the 27th starting position that you see in the box score so far.
You would hope that would surprise no one.
Right. Well, you would hope. But there seems to be a big deal having been made out of the struggles of the Penske team. There's not that much of a struggle. They got caught out on one and on the rain on one, and they have an accident in the other. But don't worry, they'll be strong on race day, and I don't think it's going to take too long for at least one, if not both, of the guys that are starting further back to make their way toward the front.
Okay, let's talk about Dragon Racing.
Oh, where do we start?
Hope and Tung looked actually pretty fast before he took that tub and just destroyed it against the wall. I've never seen a car just expelling fluid like that. I don't know what was going on. It was a little like
it was very weird
fountain in the middle of the racetrack. But, he actually looked really good, and he's you know put together. He seems articulate. I don't think anybody would be offended to see him back in a race car in the IndyCar series.
No, I think he held his own very well during the week. He kept his nose clean for the most part until the accident. And that, to be fair, he's not the first person to crash in turn one of qualifying, and it was on his fourth lap. It was a very gusty day. At the time I was sitting with Jake Quarria from the IMS Radio Network up in turn two. The wind was very gusty coming from the southeast, from turn two, kind of toward the pagoda, if you will. And as the cars came through turn one and hit the apex, that wind was pinning the front of, no pun intended, but pinning the front of the car down, and you could just see how loose a lot of those cars were. I don't think Hopin has the experience really to understand how the wind affected the car that much at that speed at Indianapolis, and I think he just got caught out. He made a rookie mistake, I think. He's not the first. He won't be the last, and I agree with you. I think he's a very competent driver, and probably a driver that would show pretty well in the IndyCar series.
And then let's talk about Scott Speed.
I mean, the rumors were already swirling when I got there Friday morning of some issues. Apparently he had gotten pretty spooked on Thursday with the looseness of the race car. So I don't know if there was a dust-up on Thursday or not, but whatever happened on Friday between Scott Speed and Jay Penske and the rest of the Dragon Racing crew, whatever happened, it wasn't handled appropriately. I don't know what happened for sure, but certainly the dirty laundry shouldn't have been aired in public until it got cleaned up.
No, because there was somebody on Twitter basically transcribing the conversation verbatim, apparently, that they were having. There's always somebody standing around figuring out what's going on. So not a good idea to be doing those things in the middle of pit lane in Indianapolis.
No, no. And I think both of those men are professionals. They ought to know better than that. You carry out those conversations in private, and you don't let them get into the public until the situation is resolved. You know, you don't tell your team you're quitting and then leave, and then have your agent apparently tell you, hey, that's not a good idea, and then you walk back with your tail between your legs.
Mm-hmm.
Because whether he says it or not, I can't help that there's not even a little bit more smugness to Scott Speed after Patrick Carpentier comes in and then crashes the car on Saturday morning.
He actually got on Twitter and basically said, see?
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Yeah, not cool.
Yeah, so if he wasn't uncool enough that he carries out his private feud in public on Friday, then he basically kind of goes and taunts the accident that Carpentier has on Saturday. Yeah, I didn't have a whole lot of respect for Speed before, but you know that didn't help me gain any more, I'll tell you that.
Speaking of Carpentier, where did he come from? They got him on a plane from Vegas on the red eye to come overnight. There's got to have been somebody that was closer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jacques Lazier was basically handing out business cards to anyone that would take it. I mean, he could have put that car up to speed or at least felt the car out to see if it was a problem with the car and get him pointed in the right direction. I mean, he was there. Roger Yasukawa was there. IRL favorite Jimmy Kite was there. You know, there were any one of 5-6 drivers probably on the ground that could have shaken that down. I have no idea where Carpentier came from.
I mean, not that I have a problem with Carpentier. I don't. I think he's a good driver. I don't know why they put him on a plane overnight from Vegas when...
And he hasn't been in an IndyCar in 6 years.
Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
I drove at... I don't know. Yeah.
It was very odd to see him in the car Saturday.
Yeah. But hey, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Can't change it now.
Nope.
One other topic that I would like to discuss that really has, sadly, really slowed down the discussion of this since Saturday because of some other things that have happened that have sort of overshadowed it a bit, which is a shame, is just Sarah Fisher Racing and Ed Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Fisher's emotion while Ed was running his laps was just, that's what Indy is about, those moments and seeing what she was experiencing and how happy and proud she was. That was just awesome.
Indy is an emotional roller coaster enough for a fan.
Yeah.
And then you get an owner level. And then you get a pregnant owner level of emotional. It's just not even fair. I mean, she never stood a chance.
Very true. Very true. But, I mean, that was an awesome run by Ed. And they've really gotten it together really quickly.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And Sarah keeps saying, you know I made the right decision. I know I did. And it's coming to fruition really quickly, and it's really great to see. And they've got so many hometown fans that are rooting for them this weekend, as demonstrated by our bloggers tonight. At least two of them were picking Ed Carpenter for the win.
And let me tell you how much respect Ed Carpenter has. During the rainout, I was sitting on the pit wall, on the second range sprinkle, if you will, on Sunday. I was sitting on pit wall, and Michael Cannon from KB Racing comes out to the pit lane, and I strike up a conversation. There's probably no more respected engineer on pit lane than Michael Cannon. And we struck up a conversation, and I had actually asked him about Alex Tagliani and some issues, why he thought that the smaller teams were doing so well. And completely unprompted by me, Michael starts talking about how much respect he has for Ed Carpenter and how much he enjoys watching Ed Carpenter run on ovals. And even before Michael Cannon was involved with IndyCar, when he was still part of Champ Car back in, you know, 2006, 2007 era, he said he had his eye on Ed Carpenter. And to hear that sort of praise coming from somebody like Michael Cannon, who obviously has worked with some of the best drivers in the business and works with Tony Kanaan now, to hear that sort of unprompted praise toward Ed Carpenter shows that he has a lot of respect in the paddock. So from that standpoint, it shouldn't necessarily be a surprise. He ran so well last year at Indianapolis and at Kentucky with Panther Racing. So now I think Ed has been very beneficial for the Sarah Fisher team, and Sarah's made some great moves from a personnel and from the ownership standpoint. So hopefully we can see more of this type of success this coming weekend and at the rest of the ovals that that team plans to go to throughout the rest of the year.
Absolutely. Any other topics you wanted to approach?
Well, I figured you wanted to talk about Alex Tagliani. We haven't even talked about him yet.
Well, I guess, you know, I don't know what else there is left to say. I spoke to Tag earlier this week at the media availability on Monday. That audio, along with audio from Paul Tracy and James Hinchcliffe, is up on the site. So if you've missed that, go give it a listen. All three of them were excellent to talk to, Hinch in particular, of course, being the affable guy that he is. But Tag, in that interview, talked in great detail about the emotion that he went through, the emotion that Sam Schmidt went through, and what it meant to Tag to be a part of that. And so it was... everything that I have to say about the matter is in that interview, so just go listen to that. It's a proud day for Canada, first Canadian pole sitter ever for the Indianapolis 500. Amazing to see that little team doing so well after such a short period of time. Amazing to see Sam Schmidt get the success that he deserves. And Alex really doesn't have a long history with the Brickyard himself, so to see him put it all together very, very quickly and at a relatively late stage in his career is really is great to see, and we of course hope that he's got a few more years left in him so that we can see it even more, and that's all I have on it.
And kudos to Alex's teammate Townsend Bell, who shouldn't be overlooked either for qualifying inside row two.
Well, we could do the whole field and talk about these things, right?
Well, certainly could, but from the standpoint...
Both Panther entries, Dan Weldon with Brian Herta, Pippa Mann made the field. She was devastated on Sunday morning. She was so convinced she was going home. Mm. But she did it. She put it in. I don't know where she got that run from, but she did. And front to back, this field is full of amazing stories this year, and the race on Sunday should be the perfect cap to it, and watching with interest to see which one of these plays out, and it would be just, in spite of my prediction and some of the predictions of others, it would be just fantastic to see somebody new drinking the milk this year.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that's a good place to leave it off, don't you?
I think we can call it a wrap there.
Okay, so please keep an eye on More Front Wing this weekend. Paul and I will both be on the ground at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway providing updates all weekend from the More Front Wing Twitter account, my Twitter account at 99forever, and Paul's at Field of 33. And we'll also be providing our daily summaries on morefrontwing.com. And don't forget the Mugseum and Bunapalooza on Monday morning. We're partnering with Tony Johns of Papa Valve, who you heard earlier tonight, to get together at the IMS Museum at 9 a.m., and then we'll be moving on from there after viewing the 67 winning cars display. We'll be moving on to the famed Mug and Bun, which will be my first experience with a Mug and Bun. I'm very much looking forward to it. And we'll be heading over there probably at around 10:30 or 11 or so as a group. So if you're free, there is a Tweetvite page. If you happen to be able to respond, that's great, just so we know to look for you, but it's not that formal. If you can just show up, then just show up, and we will see you there, we hope. And I'm sure that there are plenty of other points in the weekend where we'll be seeing people and meeting people as well, particularly the Burger Bash, on the Carb Night Burger Bash with Kurt Cavan, and that one's always a popular one up at 96th Street Steak Burger in the evening.
Where you will have a chance to secure some of the More Front Wing t-shirts that have been floating around as well.
That's right, as well as some other good racing memorabilia up for, I believe there's some for giveaway and some for auction to benefit local children's charities of Kurt's choosing. So I remember Kurt saying at one point that he's partial to charities that help children with hearing problems. So That's where your money will be going. So please do go out and spend it and enjoy a great cause. Of course, there are just so many fantastic fan events going on this weekend. There's the entire May Indie Tweet Up on Thursday, which of course will be today as of when this file goes up, so it may be a little late to join into those, but if you can take a look at mayindietweetup.com. I believe there's a Pizza King tweet up on Saturday night being organized by our co-conspirator Bash. Speed Freak Bash, the Twitter account there, is where you can find updates on that. Any others I'm not thinking of, Paul?
Boy, there's so many. Those are the ones that come to mind.
I'm sure that more or less covers it. Keep an eye on Twitter. There may be impromptu things that will come up as well. So just keep an eye on that. And with that, we'll call it a day. We're looking forward to providing you all the coverage that we can this weekend, and keep an eye on More Front Wing for updates. And remember that morefrontwing.com is your source online for blogs, photos, podcasts, and more covering the IZOD IndyCar series and beyond.